Welcome to Band Camp. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Dan, and this is the podcast where we read banned books and try to figure out why they were banned in the first place. This season, we are reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. Just a heads up, we're going to be spoiling it because that's what we do here. We're reading one chapter at a time out loud. If you need to catch up, check out Band Camp Season 5, Episode 1. Come on over and follow us over in Grahamtown, Instagram, at bandcamp_podcast. Before Jennifer starts reading, here he is. Let's introduce the third member of our team. He's our trusty robot. Look at you sitting there all plugged in. Give us a recap. What happened last time, buddy boy?
Previously on Bandcamp, our cosmic trio Meg, Calvin, and Charles Wallace peered into the universe through the happy medium's crystal ball, witnessing a stark battle between light and dark. Amid these visions, a poignant revelation unfolds as Mrs. Watson recounts her past life as a star, her sacrifice casting a new light on their journey. As the group processes these deep insights, they gear up for their next formidable challenge. Poised at the threshold of the central intelligence, the questions loom large. What secrets lie within? Meanwhile, amidst the cosmic drama, witness the triumphant return of Dan the Master Thespian, adding a touch of theatrical flair to the adventure. What happens next? You're about to find out.
Thank you, Robot. And with that being said, let's begin the second part of Chapter 6 of A Wrinkle in Time. Below them, the town was laid out in harsh, angular patterns. The houses in the outskirts were all exactly alike, small square boxes painted gray. Each had a small rectangular plot of lawn in front, with a straight line of dull-looking flowers edging the path to the door. Meg had a feeling that if she could count the flowers, there would be exactly the same number for each house. In front of all the houses, children were playing. Some were skipping rope, some were bouncing balls. Meg felt vaguely that something was wrong with their play. It seemed exactly like children playing around any housing development at home, and yet there was something different about it. She looked at Calvin and saw that he too was puzzled. "Look," Charles Wallace said suddenly. "They're skipping and bouncing in rhythm. Everyone's doing it exactly the same."
It's creepy. That is creepy.
It is a little creepy. It's like a mechanical rather than organic.
It's like the suburbia version of the Stepford Wives. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. As the skipping rope hit the pavement, so did the ball. As the rope curved over the head of the jumping child, the child with the ball caught the ball. Down came the ropes, down came the balls, over and over again, up, down, all in rhythm.
That is a Ray Bradbury sentence. Down came the ropes, down came the balls, over and over again, up, down, all in rhythm, balls down. Oh, balls down. I don't know if you'd actually say that.
No, I agree. Then the doors of all the houses opened simultaneously, and out came women like a row of paper dolls. The print of their dresses was different, but they all gave the appearance of being the same. Each woman stood on the steps of her house. Each clapped. Each child with the ball caught the ball. Each child with the skipping rope folded the rope. Each child turned and walked into the house. The doors clicked shut behind them. "How can they do it?" Meg asked wonderingly. "We couldn't do it that way if we tried. What does it mean?" "Let's go back," Calvin's voice was urgent. "Back?" Charles Wallace asked. "Where?" "I don't know. Anywhere. Back to the hill."
This kid is freaked out over the weird people. Let's get the hell out of here. Dude, if you're scared now, oh man, I pray for you, buddy boy, because they just said, you guys have to be strong for what you're about to see. I don't think this is it.
Oh man, I know.
Get the hell out of here.
"Back," Charles Wallace asked. "Where?" "I don't know. Anywhere. Back to the hill. Back to Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who and Mrs. Witch. I don't like this." "But they aren't there. Do you think they'd come to us if we turned back now?" "I don't like it," Calvin said again. "Come on." Impatience made Meg squeak. "You know we can't go back. Mrs. What's-It said to go into the town." She started on down the street, and the two boys followed her. The houses, all identical, continued as far as the eye could reach. Then, all at once, they saw the same thing and stopped to watch. In front of one of the houses stood a little boy with a ball, and he was bouncing it, but he bounced it rather badly and with no particular rhythm, sometimes dropping it and running after it with awkward, furtive leaps, sometimes throwing it up into the air and trying to catch it. The door of his house opened and out ran one of the mother figures. She looked wildly up and down the street, saw the children, and put her hand to her mouth as though to stifle a scream, grabbed the little boy, and rushed indoors with him. The ball dropped from his fingers and rolled out into the street. So she's scared of them?
She doesn't want her kid to be found out.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Maybe. Charles Wallace ran after it and picked it up, holding it out for Meg and Calvin to see. It seemed like a perfectly ordinary brown rubber ball. Let's take it in to him and see what happens, Charles Wallace suggested. Meg pulled at him. Mrs. What's-It said for us to go on into the town. Well, we are in the town, aren't we? The outskirts, anyway. I want to know more about this. I have a hunch it may help us later. You go on if you don't want to come with me. No, Calvin said firmly, we're going to stay together. Mrs. What's-It said we weren't to let them separate us. But I'm with you on this. Let's knock and see what happens. They went up the path to the house, Meg reluctant, eager to get on into the town. Let's hurry, she begged. Please, don't you want to find Father? Yes, Charles Wallace said, but not blindly. How can we help him if we don't know what we're up against? And it's obvious we've been brought here to help him, not just find him. He walked briskly up the steps and knocked at the door. They waited. Nothing happened. Then Charles Wallace saw a bell, and this he rang. They could hear the bell buzzing in the house, and the sound of it echoed down the street. After a moment, the mother figure opened the door. All up and down the street, other doors opened, but only a crack, and eyes peered toward the three children and the woman looking fearfully out the door at them. What do you want? She asked. It isn't paper time yet. We've had milk time. We've had this month's Pooler Prush person. Is that supposed to be like making fun of the Fuller Brush man?
What was the Fuller Brush? It was in the days of the vacuum cleaner sales, but it was a different thing.
Was it a paintbrush? That wouldn't make sense. Why would they be selling paintbrushes?
The sharp mind of Jennifer strikes again. You're right, Jennifer. Nobody would sell paintbrushes door-to-door. The Fuller Brushman was a door-to-door salesman who became quite iconic in American culture. These salesmen worked for the Fuller Brush Company, which was founded back in 1906. They traveled from house to house selling household cleaning brushes and other products. This character even inspired movies and comedic sketches, epitomizing the door-to-door salesman's role in mid-20th century American life.
This is Red Skelton, your Fuller Brush man.
Boy, oh boy. The things that can happen to a guy that goes around knocking on strange doors all day.
Fuller Brush, right. There you go. And I've given my decency donations regularly. All my papers are in order. I think your little boy dropped his ball, Charles Wallace said, holding it out. The woman pushed the ball away. Oh, no. The children in our section never drop balls. They're all perfectly trained. We haven't had an aberration for 3 years. All up and down the block, heads nodded in agreement. Charles Wallace moved closer to the woman and looked past her into the house. Behind her in the shadows, he could see the little boy, who must have been about his own age. You can't come in, the woman said. You haven't shown me any papers. I don't have to let you in if you haven't any papers. Charles Wallace held the ball out beyond the woman so that the little boy could see it. Quick as a flash, the boy leaped forward and grabbed the ball from Charles Wallace's hand, then darted back into the shadows. The woman went very white, opened her mouth as though to say something, then slammed the door in their faces instead. All up and down the street, doors slammed. What are they afraid of? Charles Wallace asked. What's the matter with them? Don't you know? Meg asked him. Don't you know what all this is about, Charles? Not yet, Charles Wallace said. Not even an inkling. And I'm trying, but I didn't get through anywhere. Not even a chink. Let's go. After several blocks, the houses gave way to apartment buildings. At least Meg felt sure that that was what they must be. They were fairly tall, rectangular buildings, absolutely plain. Each window, each entrance exactly like every other. Then, coming toward them, down the street, was a boy about Calvin's age, riding a machine that was something like a combination of a bicycle and a motorcycle. It had the slimness and lightness of a bicycle. And yet, as the foot pedals turned, they seemed to generate an unseen source of power so that the boy could pedal very slowly and yet move along the street quite swiftly. As he reached each entrance, he thrust one hand into a bag he wore slung over his shoulder, pulled out a roll of papers, and tossed it into the entrance. It might have been Dennis or Sandy or any one of hundreds of boys with a newspaper route in any one of hundreds of towns back home. And yet, as with the children playing ball and jumping rope, there was something wrong about it. The rhythm of the gesture never varied. The paper flew in identically the same arc at each doorway, landed in identically the same spot. It was impossible for anybody to throw with such consistent perfection. Calvin whistled. I wonder if they play baseball here. As the boys saw them, he slowed down on his machine and stopped. His hand arrested as it was about to plunge into the paper bag. What are you kids doing out on the street? He demanded. Only rap boys are allowed out now. You know that. No, we don't know it, Charles Wallace said. We're strangers here. How about telling us something about this place? You mean you've had your entrance papers processed and everything? The boy asked. You must have if you're here, he answered himself. And what are you doing here if you don't know about us? You tell me, Charles Wallace said. Are you examiners? The boy asked a little anxiously. Everybody knows our city has the best central intelligence center on the planet. Our production levels are the highest. Our factories never close. Our machines never stop rolling. Added to this, we have 5 poets, 1 musician.
What is this weird town?
I don't know, but it's like very heavy-handed with the science fiction here. Like the whole time I wasn't quite sure about science fiction. They're talking a little bit about Wrinkles in Time. But this totally sounds like science fiction, futuristic. Like it's always a dystopia, right? Like I wonder why people are so terrified of machines all the time. Like it's always a dystopia where machines have totally obliterated, you know, human nature and nature in general. It's weird.
Well, yeah, but I do agree with you. And also, though, this seems to be all about, I don't know if it's about capitalism, we don't know what it's about, but the first thing he said is our city has the highest production levels. It's like literally the first thing he said, like our factories are just pumping stuff out. We're the number one in the whole world, on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, isn't that kind of weird?
We'll find out soon enough, I'm sure. What are you quoting from? Charles Wallace asked. The manual, of course, the boy said. We are the most oriented city on the planet. There has been no trouble of any kind for centuries. All Kamazots knows our record. That is why we are the capital city of Kamazots. That is why Central Intelligence is located here. That is why it makes its homes here. It is capitalized, IT.
Maybe it's IT?
Maybe it is IT.
It must be it.
But Central is capitalized too, though. There was something about the way he said it that made a shiver run up and down Meg's spine. But Charles Wallace asked briskly, where is this Central Intelligence Center of yours? Central, the boy corrected. Just keep going and you can't miss it. You are strangers, aren't you? What are you doing here? Are you supposed to ask questions? Charles Wallace demanded severely. The boy went white, just as the woman had. I humbly beg your pardon. I must continue my route now, or I will have to talk my timing into the explainer. And he shot off down the street on his machine. Charles Wallace stared after him. What is it? He asked Meg and Calvin. There was something funny about the way he talked, as though he weren't really doing the talking.
Somebody over at Central. These guys are all robots.
It sure seems like it. Calvin nodded thoughtfully. Funny is right. Not only the way he talked, either. The whole thing smells. Come on, Meg pulled at them. How many times was it she had urged them on? Let's go find Father. He'll be able to explain it all to us. They walked on. After several more blocks, they began to see other people, grown-up people, not children, walking up and down and across the streets. These people ignored the children entirely, seeming to be completely intent on their own business. Some of them went into the apartment buildings. Most of them were heading in the same direction as the children. As these people came to the main street from the side streets, they would swing around the corners with an odd, automatic stride, as though they were so deep in their own problems and the route was so familiar that they didn't have to pay any attention to where they were going.
They're robots.
Yeah, I still think it's like a hive mind situation where they're all kind of connected somewhere.
Yeah.
After a while, the apartment buildings gave way to what must have been office buildings. Great stern structures with enormous entrances. Men and women with briefcases poured in and out. Charles Wallace went up to one of the women, saying politely, "Excuse me, but could you please tell me?" But she hardly glanced at him as she continued on her way. "Look," Meg pointed. Ahead of them, across the square, was the largest building they had ever seen, higher than the Empire State Building and almost as long as it was high. "This must be it," Charles Wallace said. "They're Central Intelligence, or whatever it is. Let's go in." So it kind of sounds like communist Russia or something. Like, you know, what Americans thought of as the Soviet Union or whatever.
Getting that vibe, especially back in the 60s. I could definitely see that.
Right, especially if like Soviet Russia didn't allow religion or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to get in the writers' heads. Like, the only thing you're beholden to is the state and production or something like that.
Right.
Hmm.
That is what it seems like. Because even the little kid was like, "We got the best production in the planet." Yeah, you're right.
Mm. Anyways, they're going to go in. "But if father's in some kind of trouble with this planet," Meg objected, "isn't that exactly where we shouldn't go?" "Well, how do you propose finding him?" Charles Wallace demanded. "I certainly wouldn't ask there." "I didn't say anything about asking, but we aren't going to have the faintest idea where or how to begin to look for him until we find out something more about this place. If you have a better idea, Meg, why, of course, just say so." "Oh, get down off your high horse," Meg said crossly. "Let's go to your Central Intelligence and get it over with." "I think we ought to have passports or something," Calvin suggested. "If we needed passports or papers, Mrs. Wetsit would have told us so," Charles Wallace said. Calvin put his hands on his hips and looked down at Charles Wallace. "Now look here, old sport. I love those three old girls just as much as you do, but I'm not sure they know everything."
You shouldn't go into the Central. And there's three kids. How are you going to go in there and talk them into giving three weird kids who aren't in sync paperwork?
Right.
I would be like, okay, we have to go in like this. Okay, we're going to go up, down, up, down. Okay, one, two, three, up, down. Everyone get together. Yeah, up, down. No, up, down, up, down. This is how we walk.
Well, I mean, they should probably have some sort of plan because it seems like there are consequences for not having papers. Like, why are people so scared? They're scared of something. But
some were scared, right? Like the mom and the kid were scared, but then they get into the adults and goes, "Hey, ma'am, excuse me, what?" And she didn't even pay attention. Like, "You guys are just kids. You're nothing."
Yeah,
you know what
well,
I mean?
True.
Like, we're going up and just like all the houses and the buildings kept getting bigger and bigger. The level of importance of the people kept getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I mean, so like you're saying the further away from Central they are, the more scared people are?
Yeah. I mean, here sounds like they could totally blend in and do whatever they wanted because no one's even looking at them.
Yeah, that's right? A good point.
So just look around for your dad and get out.
Granted, but you know Mrs. Wetsit talked about having been a star. I wouldn't think that being a star would give her much practice in knowing about people. When she tried to be a person, she came pretty close to goofing it up. There was never anybody on land or sea like Mrs. Wetsit the way she got herself up. "She was just having fun," Charles said. "If she'd wanted to look like you or Meg, I'm sure she could have." Calvin shook his head. "I'm not so sure. And these people seem to be people, if you know what I mean. There's something very offbeat about them. But they're lots more like ordinary people than the ones on Uriel." "Do you suppose they're robots?" Meg suggested. Charles Wallace shook his head. "No, that boy who dropped the ball isn't any robot. And I don't think the rest of them are either. Let me listen for a minute." They stood very still, side by side, in the shadow of one of the big office buildings. Six large doors kept swinging open, shut, as people went in and out, looking straight ahead, paying no attention to the children whatsoever. Charles wore his listening, probing look. "I'm not sure what they are, but they're not robots. I can feel minds there. I can't get at them at all, but I can feel them sort of pulsing."
What is this little weird kid with his magic skull powers? I think it is a hive mind thing, and these are people, but they're all being controlled by some mastermind.
Something, right? The three of them stood there quietly. The doors kept opening and shutting, and the stiff people hurried in and out, walking jerkily like figures in an old silent movie. Then, abruptly, the stream of movement thinned. There were only a few people, and these moved more rapidly, as if the film had been speeded up. One white-faced man in a dark suit looked directly at the children and said, "Oh dear, I shall be late," and flickered into the building. "He's like the white rabbit," Meg giggled nervously. "I'm scared," Charles said. "I can't reach them at all. I'm completely shut out." "We have to find Father," Meg started again. "Meg," Charles Wallace's eyes were wide and frightened. "I'm not sure we'll even know Father. It's been so long, and I was only a baby." Meg's reassurance came quickly. "You'll know him. Of course you'll know him. The way you know me, even without looking, because I'm always there for you. You can always reach in." "Yes." Charles punched one small fist into an open palm with a gesture of great decision. "Let's go to Central Intelligence." Calvin reached out and caught both Charles and Meg by the arm. "You remember when we met, you asked me why I was there. And I told you it was because I had a compulsion. A feeling I just had to come to that particular place at that particular moment." "Yes, sure. I've got another feeling. Not the same kind, a different one. A feeling that if we go into that building, we're going into terrible danger." End of chapter.
This chapter had two really good cliffhangers.
Yeah, for sure.
Last episode where we broke when they were like, "Let's go down to this town. It seems like a normal town to me." No. This one, it's like they're going into Central. What is this all about? Who was that white-faced dude?
I think he's the one in charge. It's like, how would you say, like one of these weird conspiracy theorists believe, like he's like the lizard person, right? The person in charge. The Illuminati. There's a lot of words. There's a lot of people that have these weird conspiracies. So he's basically that. But in this case, apparently he's real.
Do you ever get on TikTok?
Sometimes, like guys looking up how to cut hair the other day.
Yeah, I was too. I was, what happens, like now you're going to get a billion how to cut hair videos on TikTok. Next time you log in. And this happened like 2 months ago. I made the mistake of watching. And listen, if I'm about to offend somebody, I'm sorry. I'm just a dum-dum. I saw some goofball arguing with a scientist, like a guy from NASA, and the NASA guy's being really calm. And I flip in, it was a live TikTok, and the NASA guy's going, No, the Earth is a sphere. We've seen it. No, the Earth isn't. No. It's flat. And this, I'm like watching, like, wow, this guy is a real dummy. Again, if you're a flat earther,
you're a real dummy.
Yeah. Now I watched one video. Now all I am getting are these tinfoil hat videos. Everything is a conspiracy.
That's the problem.
That boat hit the bridge. And all of a sudden, that's Biden. Everything. First of all, everything's Biden's fault.
That's so correct.
You got that whole crew. Everything is Biden's fault. There are so many nut jobs on TikTok with these conspiracies. Like the Illuminati, those guys seem pretty normal compared to a lot of TikTokers out there.
And it's weird. A real problem, like because like you said, the algorithm starts feeding you that sort of thing. And some people... Yeah. Really start believing that stuff. And it's kind of sad and it's kind of scary, but as long as people aren't doing anything that's going to hurt other people, I guess it's okay that they have these weird thoughts.
What happens in society, I think, when you get disenfranchised people, and before the internet, they were just randos who were disenfranchised, good people, bad people, it didn't matter. They just didn't belong anywhere. And then the internet came out. And you got a little of it because all of a sudden you could communicate with every wrong. Hey, did you watch Seinfeld last night? That was a funny one. Like now you have this disenfranchised group of people like finding little message boards and areas to meet up on the internet, right? I mean, Facebook and social media, that turned into that. But now, and I kind of think, I know like you're probably thinking like I'm as nuts as the conspiracy people go, oh, it's everything according to Dan is Trump's fault. But Trump really broke some people with the whole fake news thing.
And alternative facts, right?
Because now you have a freaking NASA scientist arguing. No, he's not arguing. He's right. But you have some dolt arguing with a NASA scientist. And like they always end like, nah, I just don't buy it. Sorry, dude. Sorry, Professor Egghead. But you're the dummy.
Yeah. It's a little weird. It's, you know, that there's like the hundreds of thousands of people who fall for these weird conspiracies. But at the beginning, it's like, what kind of a mad evil person would start something like this Q of QAnon? Like whoever that is, I'm sure like at the beginning, whoever's making up these lies and these conspiracies can't believe them, right? And it's like, well, what is the impetus? Like, why would anyone ever want to mislead people?
It seems too much like smart people making fun of dumb followers. And that's why, like, I really hate TV networks like Fox News, or, I mean, they almost seem normal compared to One Nation or whatever. Like, you know, there's way worse channels now than Fox News on basic cable. And then you get into a lot of the independent media, which is really, like, I like independent journalism. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I like, but you do have to remember that it's like, I don't know how much of these guys know. You just are attracted to their personality. You like what they're saying. So you kind of gravitate toward those people. But the one thing I truly hate is when people know better.
Yeah.
And they're just in it for the money. And it's like, you know, yeah, if Trump gets in again, it's probably going to be the end of the country, but we can make a couple bucks in advertising. So let's help that happen. And let's just tell lies to our gullible audience. And that's cynical, man. And that is sick. Like, I don't know how you can sleep with yourself if you have people who are looking up to you to get facts and you're feeding them bullshit.
Yeah.
It's time for PPP, problematic points to ponder. What, if anything, would be considered banworthy in this chapter?
All right. So PPP in that chapter, let's see. Nothing offensive, nothing banworthy.
Sorry, ladies, Moms for Liberty. Better luck next time, gals.
All right, we've caused enough literary chaos for today. Thank you for listening, scary book people.
You can find us on Instagram at Bandcamp_podcast, where you can connect with fellow scary book people, join in the polls and discussions, and you can vent about the evils of book banning. And we really do hope you join our community. We'd love to see you there and engage with you.
Bandcamp is produced and hosted by Dan Schultz and me, Jennifer Davis. All media used in this production was done so under the protection of fair use. See you next time.
See you guys later.